You're listening to Nutty Bites, now with 60% more Klingon.
Hello, Mixed Night Cases. This is Nuke Joss, and I've got with me my regular antagonist.
Hi, I'm Tech.
And we're going to be talking about, I'm never going to need this. Oh, wait. Yes, I do. We're going to be talking about the things that we learned in school that we were really sure we were never going to need. And as it turns out, we use it all the time.
All the time.
This was prompted from a meme that I saw. And it was basically me in calculus. I'm never going to need this. Me playing D&D. Okay, so if the cleric is here and...
Yeah, if the cleric is floating 30 feet in the air and the party's 25 feet away, am I within range of casting Bless?
Yes.
Yeah, math.
Math.
Or to anybody that looked at a statistics class going, I'm never going to use this. This is dumb. And then there they are with a fantasy football spreadsheet going, so if I pick the Oakland defense, do I still have enough points to beat the Steelers next week? Yeah, and you laughed at us for playing D&D, didn't you, sports jocks? Ha-ha!
Yes.
I'm still going on the theory that fantasy football is nothing but D&D for jocks.
It is D&D for jocks. It's totally D&D for jocks. And the dice rollers are actual people playing games.
Yep.
Yeah. So, would you like to start us off?
One that I had no idea I would use this much or how big of an influence it has had on my life is that, you know, in high school, growing up in Ontario, we needed 2 business credits to get our diplomas to graduate high school, a minimum of 2. And my first one was typing, which I took in 9th grade, which I, the year after me, just to tell how old I am, it typing stopped and we stopped using typewriters and it became keyboarding and they started using computers. But the curriculum didn't change. The whole point of the class was that after one semester, you would get up to typing 35 words per minute. And I took it because it was an easy business credit. And I mean, who doesn't need to learn how to type? And whatever, I'll get it over with because I don't want to get into business. That's not my thing. I'm an engineer. I want to work with machines. And I'll just get it out of the way as an easy prerequisite. But oh my gosh, how much have I typed in my life? We met by typing. We met by writing in a collaborative writing group.
And had neither of us been able to type quickly, we would not have been able to communicate effectively. And we would have just not connected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wish I learned typing or keyboarding in school. I know that my mom tried. I had the Sticky Bear Thump Commodore game. Mm-hmm. I had typewriters to practice on. I struggled, and I really struggled. But what helped me actually learn to type were chat rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I went from hunt and pecking to touch typing because I just hunt and pecking took too long.
Right.
And it eventually went to, as I called it, hunt and pecking gone mad, mm-hmm. to I basically touch type, but I don't really use my pinkies.
Right. I was like a 3-finger typer before taking the class. And then afterwards, I touch type and I touch type pretty well. And to the people that are watching me on stream, they can see that I can do it without a keyboard because I've gotten that good with it because of practice.
And I think it is definitely solidified in that muscle memory for you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, so the computers that we had in school, we had these electric typewriters that had memory that they would keep one line in memory before you hit the enter key. Then when you hit the enter or carriage return to bring it back down to the next line to type the next line, it would then print the line while you were writing the next one. And the game that we would always play in class was to try to be faster than the machine so that while it was printing the line above, you already had the next line done. So you were waiting for the machine because it only had one line of memory.
Well, those one line of memory typewriters, though, were really cool because it meant you didn't have to deal with correction fluid.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Because those were the typewriters I had at home because I would, you know, type on these fancy electric typewriters, but then I would go home to write my papers. And so At first, I had a ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk with, like, individual arms for individual letters, but eventually we got an electric one that had all of the characters on a ball.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it would spin the ball and then press it to the paper. But still, if you made a mistake, it was you with the correcting paper dropping it down in front of your paper and going back and then going, I'm adding Foley when I don't need to.
I love it. I love it. But we've got the chat open, and Hatching Phoenix is saying that we're the only people that had older machines in typing class, mm-hmm. that he had Apple II. Are those two E's or L's?
That's an Apple II.
Okay, Apple II. And then, but I must remind you, we are older than you are. and Shane had a BBC Micro. I don't know that one. I'm going to have to Google that. So I wish I learned typing sooner, but apparently all it took to get me interested was being engaged and having a better reward. A 2E. Okay. Apple 2E. There you go. So
I love typing class, and it was the way it was done. It was all fun little competitions and games that we would play to get us to type and to type faster. And the whole goal of the class was to get us to 35 words a minute. I think I got up to 55. But I had a girl in my class that was a classically trained pianist, and I just could not keep up to those fingers. I mean, she was just so much better than I will ever be at typing. But we had like a little chart on the wall, and then every day in class, we would at the end of every class was a speed drill, and you would go through, and then you would log your progression on a chart, and you would watch that chart just slowly ever edge its way up towards that magic 35 that meant you passed.
What was it the last time you timed yourself?
Last time I timed myself was over 60.
Yeah.
Probably edging into the 70s, but I have a big difference between gross net when I'm going for speed because I do a lot of backspacing.
Yeah, the last one that I did, it counted, errors counted against you.
Yeah.
So I can't recall what my number was. I never remember what it is. I looked up the BBC Micro, by the way, and once I saw a picture of it, I was like, oh yeah, I remember those.
I'm fast enough that in class, when I was in my postgrad studies last year, that I could type notes to a professor talking in class, and that I could keep up with the ebb and flow of the conversation in the class between the students and the professor, and I could just keep my notes going, and I could type while paying attention to the presentation and to whatever they had on the screen behind them and to whatever they were demonstrating on the machinery. I could just keep typing, and I could type my notes without looking at the screen.
BBC, geez. ADD, hard at work, you know?
Hard at work, but that's how I take notes now. I type as I listen.
Yeah, I can type pretty well. I can type while I'm talking. I don't know how accurate they'll be, but I can usually come back. Although I do have, like, as we call it, typo-itis. It's not as bad as some, but not as good as others. I'm going to piggyback on that in a theme. Now, before I do, actually, so when you were in high school, what did you think you were going to do with your life?
Well, my dream was to become a pilot in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
But I had parents that were very against me joining the military, and that mm-hmm. they really wanted me to get a fully rounded education and do whatever made me happy. And when it was that the military made me happy, well, you just don't know what you want. You just got to keep studying. As my high school career went on, my dreams of a pilot sort of drifted further and further away, because you need college for that university. And I was too dumb, and I didn't realize that I wasn't. It's just that school got harder, and media has a horrible influence, where every TV show growing up in the 90s was all about, you need a scholarship. If you don't have a scholarship, you're dead, because you can't afford school, and you need a scholarship, and you need to be smart to get scholarships, and Jesse Spano gets the scholarships, and you're like...
Yeah, like Jesse Spano's freaking out and getting a drug problem
because
she's on speed. Like, what hope do we have?
Yeah, but you're Screech, and you're Screech, and he's a nerd, and he's never going to get anything. And you're like Screech, and you're not going to get anything because you don't play football.
All right. We get the idea.
And it goes on and on and
we don't want to. We don't want to, like, trigger our listeners into reliving high school.
Right.
So.
And then count on the fact that I was just getting the crap beat out of me every day because I was a bullied kid, that I was too dumb for college. So it took me 3 years to get through grade 12, or as I call it, grade 12 and two victory laps, or, you know, grade 14.
Which I always have to insist, he went from honors with the, what was it called, with the extra grade?
Well, it was OAC. It was grade 13.
OAC, yeah.
Which was your college, which was your university prep year.
Yeah, so... He went from honors university prep year to getting left back because...
I needed one more credit to graduate. So
you're stupid? No, because of social issues. Because
I did one more year to graduate. So grade 14. Yeah. And then I went into the Army from there. And I never stopped learning in the Army. And I've been in school for 22 years now. And I've done, you know, half of an MBA. I've done a bunch of post-grad work. And the more and more I realized that, I was pretty dumb. And dumb in the way that I should have just gone to university and gotten a degree.
You could have gone to university, no problem. But I'll just say thank you for not going to university, because who knows, we may not have met.
Right, exactly.
So you never know.
I'm not upset by the path that I took. I'm just, I could have taken a different path and been just as successful. Yeah. I'd have more debt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe you'd be like me and finally have it paid off this year. So I ask you that because I wonder if when you were in typing class, did you ever think you were going to have to use this every single day?
No, because I thought I'd be up in the air, you know, slipping the surly bonds of earth and touching the face of God. I thought I'd be a pilot, you know, dancing around in jet fighters. I had no idea that 99% of my day would be, you know, well, here we are in COVID quarantine, so 99% of my work days are downstairs in my laundry room / office in front of my computer typing reports and listening to Zoom meetings and, you know, being a boring lab rat.
And I ask that because the class that I'm going to talk about was another thing where I had said to I didn't really know what I was going to do. I had some different ideas, and one of those ideas, I thought I was going to be a merchant marine, when I realized I could make a living as an artist and that there was like this whole commercial field, that's what we called it back then, I was thinking, I don't need to know how to draft a business letter. I don't need to know how to write a memo. I don't have to figure out time accounting.
All of those things are awful.
All of those things I learned in business class, and I use them every single day. And thank you, Mrs. Fagan. Thank you for all... Fagan or Fandale? Wait. No, Fagan was the... Yeah, Mrs. Fandale. That's it. Thank you, Mrs. Fandale. I use all of those. All of those all the time. Honestly, like, to me, that was like... business/adulting class.
Mm-hmm.
We had I took actually two business courses in school. One of them was retail something or other, not retail management, but something like that. That one was a lot of fun, and I thought it was going to be a throwaway course, but it was quite fun. But I learned a lot just in communicating, but specifically in working with others and communicating in a way that your ideas come across.
Mm-hmm.
In a neutral tone, and how to work with people you don't like. Because I was also a bullied kid, and I would be put in group projects. And generally what they did with me in school is when there were group projects, I would be either the group of one, or I would be grouped with the newcomer who barely spoke English, and help them out, because the social aspect. And this teacher said, when you're in an office, you're going to work with people that don't like you and are mean to you. And you have to figure out how to work with them, because you can't opt out of group work in an office.
You know, and for me, most of the times when I was in a group, I was in a group with the one special needs kid in class, where they're like, oh, you work with little Freddie or little Techie, and you just, you know, do it. And I'm like, yeah, but they can't finish the work and they can't write. And it's like, no, it's fine. You just... And
So you learned the key thing about group work, which is you do everything.
Yeah. But what I did, I just realized now having this conversation with all those times in like fourth and fifth grade that I spent doing that is, I guess it's one of the reasons, I guess it was the formative sort of things as to why I love teaching so much. And as to why, you know, now I'm a martial arts instructor and I spent 5 years at a school working as an instructor and I loved every minute of it. I love teaching. Teaching is great. And you tell that to 16-year-old little techie, he certainly would not believe you that I would become a teacher and that I would love teaching that much because, well, teachers are dorks and who likes teachers?
Hey. but it is one of those things. Like, there's just very simple, it's a simple thing that I learned, and it wasn't even like one of those core classes. But I think that it's one of the things that has helped me in every industry that I've worked in. And I've worked in multiple industries. Mm-hmm. And being able to take criticism, being able to communicate has been probably the best thing. And I was actually even brought into a college class to talk about how to draft emails, because back then the students didn't understand how to write a professional email. And I basically said, this is the same as writing a memo. We don't do memos anymore, but that's what an email is.
So one of the things I remember, sitting in math class like everybody else, looking at a page of equations going, when am I ever going to need this when I do X? I am not a mathematician. I am not a NASA rocket genius. I am not going to be sending rocket ships to the moon.
You're not a rocket surgeon. Got it.
No. Why do I need a page full of equations? I'm never going to need this. And I only recently in the last couple of years have I realized that it's not about the page of equations. It's about problem solving. It's about learning a method to solve highly complex problems with variables and things. And some of the things are you're going to memorize. Like, I still have Sokotoa memorized. I still have my force triangles memorized. A couple of those things because I use them because I work in a physics laboratory. This is my job now. But to people that don't, what you learned in math was how to solve problems.
Yeah.
Now, the whole thing is, well, if they wanted me to solve problems, why didn't I just take a problem solving class? Because that's not the point. The point is abstract thinking. The point is to be able to take something from one field and move it into other fields. So the problem solving method, the scientific method, is a thing that I use, that everyone, I would say, I would challenge that everyone uses every single day. What information am I given?
My printer's making a wonky noise and sometimes it creates lines. What am I doing when it does that? How can I solve this?
What information am I given? What am I being asked to solve? What tools do I have at my disposal? How do I use those tools to solve the problem? Do the thing. What is my conclusion? The problem solving method. We use this every day and putting it into practice, whether it's physics, math, chemistry, you know, anything else, it all comes back to the same thing of using your brain to solve complex problems in varying different fields and doing it in a way that makes logical sense.
And I'll even add on to that, that the whole idea of like, why do I need to solve for X? I'm never going to need to solve for X. You're given a project at work, but you're not given all of the information. You need to figure out what X is before you can proceed.
You solve for X every day without realizing it.
Yeah.
You're thirsty. You want a coffee. You open up your wallet and look and goes, a coffee costs this much. How much money do I have? Do I have enough with these bills to buy a coffee?
Or, you know, do I have enough time to go get said coffee before my Zoom meeting starts?
If the train to work leaves at 7:45 and there's a 10-minute line at the Starbucks, do I have enough time to get into a coffee and run to the train station before my train takes off? Or do I have to explain to my boss why I'm late for work? Or should I just buy 3 coffees and then I can give one to the boss and his secretary and keep one for me and I can now explain with a bribe as to why I'm late for work?
Top tip.
If you're late for work, just buy coffee for everyone on the way and say, yeah, it took me a couple extra minutes to come in this morning. I was getting coffee and donuts for everyone. Now, it's not going to work every day, But at least that first 2, 3, 6 times.
But if you're the person known for bringing in donuts, look, if anybody watched Dexter, he got away literally with murder because he brought in donuts all the time. Okay. He's the guy that brought in donuts. You know, all of this is getting back to, there was this great rant that went viral maybe about 10 years ago. And it was a teacher slash comedian talking about, you know, people ask, what do you make? And he talks about how he makes a difference. And he's talking about how it's not the facts that he's teaching his kids. He's teaching how to think. And
I make them write definitely beautiful, definitely beautiful, so you never misspell those two words again.
This is true. But it's true. And so much of us learning anything is our own self-practice. And so by giving us these problems, we're giving us this time for self-practice. And that's where we're learning how to think. That's where we're learning how to process. And it just, you know, I'm sure any teenagers listening to this are going to be like, Mom, why are you making me listen to this? This is so stupid. My teacher hates me. Why am I doing this? But in truth, like, there are so many times where I'm like, oh, that's why I learned this. Mm-hmm. That's why I learned this. And I get angry when people tell me, well, you need basic math, but you don't need higher math. And it's like, well, no, you do. Mm-hmm. I'm doing fractions and division and multiplication every single day. Mm-hmm. I am doing this all the time. Honestly, I want to thank members of my family for making me learn my times tables. I'm not a big fan of rote memorization, but learning the times tables and quick fast math facts, that was helpful, you know, because I do it all the time and I don't need to think. Miss Melissa in the chat says, I have a post-it on my wall in my office, weird villain liaison, because those are the words I mess up. You know, I always mess up villain.
One that gets me, and this is kind of embarrassing to admit, being a person who fixes things all day, I misspell the word maintenance.
Oh my gosh.
Every time, because I can never remember.
Curriculum.
Is it maintenance or maintenance? Because maintenance, I know it's the correct one, but it sounds like it's been spooshed together and it should be maintenance. And I mess it up every time.
I work with curriculum and I always typo curriculum.
Everybody's got words in their blind spot that are like that.
And honestly, I think that when it comes to spelling, I'm not going to say that spelling does not matter, because it definitely matters in how people perceive you. And that goes back to the communication. Mm-hmm. Somebody I care about a lot has a 2-minute delay on all of their emails because as soon as they hit send, they realize they've made a mistake.
Oh, yeah.
So they have their Outlook set to hold every email for 2 minutes.
I've always said that the best spell checker I've got is the print key.
Yeah, or the send key.
Because as soon as I print something to hard copy and I look at the hard copy that I'm about to sign my name to and hand to my boss, I look at it and go, oh, my God, this is a train wreck. There's errors here, here, and here. I use the wrong there. I use the wrong to, you know. And then I'll have to go back and furiously change all the mistakes that the spell checker and the software didn't get.
I try to not judge people on spelling. I try to remember how hard it is. And that's fine. And one of the other things that I struggle with is pronunciation. I constantly struggle with pronunciation, and living in another country where they do pronounce things differently, it's really hard. And I will try not to correct other people's pronunciation because I hate how that feels. But I always tell people, never judge a person for mispronouncing a word, because it means they learned that word by reading. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dr. Gay. shout out to Dr. Gay.
Thanks, now, Dr. Gay.
Now, what's another subject that you really didn't think you'd ever need? You said you had a whole list of them, so I wanted to make sure you had enough time.
One was a lesson that I learned in computer science class, that I learned in coding. Now, I don't work in computer science. I don't do much code beyond, you know, a couple little hobby projects that I do here and there and a class I took on Arduino. But what gets me with code, one thing that my teacher, Mr. Paquette, Thanks, Mr. Paquette. Peace be unto you, mm-hmm. because he passed a few years ago. Mr. Paquette was always very big on getting us to organize our code. That your code had to be organized in such a way that when you had a mistake and you had to go back and do problem solving on your code, that it would be very easy to find where the mistakes are being made. So things like not naming your subroutines A, B, C, D, E, and G, but naming them, you know, this is where the text goes, this is where the problem solving goes, you know, naming them things that actually represent what they are. And especially back when I learned to code, when DOS and Windows and those things only limited you to 8 characters for a file name, it became important to come up with a personalized system of file naming that you could then find the appropriate file afterwards. It didn't matter what it was, as long as it was yours and you stuck to it, was the important thing. And it was the same thing in our organization. It doesn't matter how you organize your code, you're the only person that's going to see it. But you have to be consistent. And you have to follow your own rules so that you can find the mistakes in your code later, because there will be mistakes in your code. And this is something that I've taken with me and that I use every single day into how the files in my computer are organized, as to how things are named and labeled and things, so that I can find them later. And it doesn't matter if you don't understand my filing system. I don't care. You're not going through my files. I am. Yeah. I have to find them later, so I have to know where they are and how they're labeled and organized. And there's nothing that peeves me more than receiving an attachment in an email from a coworker where it's named default.txt.
Ugh.
Or a.doc, b.doc,
c.doc,
untitled.doc. It's like, no, then I have to rename the file so that I know what I'm looking at, you know. Oh, it's default.doc. What is it? Oh, it's your letter of resignation. No, that's blogins letter resignation.doc. You know, they have to be, you have to organize your workspace, whatever your workspace is. And it's the same thing. You know, whether I'm building a model on my model table over there, or I'm fixing a machine in the kitchen, or I'm at work, it's, and it goes back to what I was saying before about the scientific method, about the problem solving method. It's the same thing. What tools do I need?
Yeah.
Let me lay out my tools. Okay, now I'm going to take apart this box. And as I take the box apart, I'm going to put the screws from this over here. And then I'm going to take the lid from that and put it over here. And everything is going to be laid out left to right, so that when I put it back together, I can go from right to left. And I'm not going to have a basket of missing screws at the end, or, you know, the leftover parts that aren't needed because I've now built the economy model. You know, you just have to, you have to have, huh?
I'm just laughing at the economy model.
Yeah. you just have to have an organized workspace, and you have to have it organized in such a way that it doesn't matter to anybody else. It has to be organized for you,
yeah,
so that you know your process forwards and backwards. And thank you, Mr. Paquette, for smashing that into my brain. Thank you for Mr. Morton in science class for spooshing that into my brain even harder with the scientific method. But you have to have an organized way to make your way through your problems, whether it's, you know, and, you know, I learned to code in BASIC. BASIC is not a language I have used since. It doesn't matter. That skill is transferable. And I've used that every single day in how I even organize, you know, the text files on, or, you know, the pictures that I'm collecting on my personal computer.
Something so simple as, like, when I'm just drafting some CSS modifications.
Sure.
I always put in the comments, you know, like, this is for this.
Oh, yeah.
This is for that. Otherwise, in 10 years, when the customer is like, hey, by the way, why does this do that? I can say, or can you change this color to that? I can go in and I can change it. Otherwise, I have to figure out, how did I do this? How did I do this again? One of the things that drives me nuts is when I get something from a colleague and they have periods in the name of their files.
Oof.
Yeah. Or when I'm teaching people and, like you said, it's, you know, my great movie one, newsletter final draft 5.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
Then it's not the final, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite would be, I would give draft 5 and then get comments or corrections and they didn't change the name of the file. It's like, how do you know the difference?
Yeah. I remember, just recently, being at a business and buying something very expensive. And, the, the salesman needed to go into the computer to print me an invoice, and I'm watching his screen while he's doing it, and he goes in and he hits the button and the print dialogue comes up and says, would you like to save the file? And he says, yes. He goes, how would you like to name the file? And he names it AAAAAAA. And then the computer goes, you already have a file named AAAAA. Would you like to change it? He says, yes, fine. AAAAAA1. Save. And then I go, don't you need a better name for that? He goes, no, 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 it's fine, it's fine. And then he presses print, and the print dialogue closes, and it goes to his desktop. And his desktop is wall-to-wall PDF icons of every invoice that he's printed just smooshed onto his desktop. Now, the thing is, to me, this is a nightmare. Because when your boss comes in, he goes, hey, I need the Jorgensen papers from last week. Can you get me the invoice for that? How do you find it if you've named them all AAAAA? But I'm sure this system works for him. I mean, he's successful and he's in business. No, I'm sure, and that's it great.
Cluttered desktops on... I'll wait till you finish dying.
Sorry. Kill me now.
Cluttered desktops give me anxiety. I would go into a school and I'm working with people in the school, and then I see their desktop and it's icons on top of icons. They have to move them around to find the right one. And it physically pains me. Now, you all at home are not going to be able to see this, but Tech, I am moving my windows aside so you can look at my desktop.
Right. So my desktop is a lot more cluttered because there's like four things on it.
Yeah.
Mine is a lot more cluttered than that, but I'll be honest with you. My desktop is a scratch pad.
So the four things on my desktop is a folder.
Yep.
And three external drives.
Right. So this is what I'm saying. My desktop is a scratch pad.
Yeah.
My desktop is things that I need 10 seconds from now. So I'll save it to the desktop so I can grab it and put it into something else.
That's the folder.
I know. If I really need it, it's not on my desktop.
Yeah.
If I really need it, it's somewhere else. Like I said, my desktop is a scratch pad. If I find a picture and I'm going to use it 10 seconds from now, I'll save it to the desktop so I can grab it quick, rip it, throw it somewhere else, and away it goes. But if I need something permanently, it's not on my desktop because it's organized in a file structure in a file tree where it needs to be, where I can find it later. So my desktop will look like a disorganized, chaotic mess because it's all just like crumpled up post-it notes at this point. It's just things I don't need anymore. And every now and then I'll go through and I'll do a trim and prune. But honestly, if it's on my desktop, I don't need it. It's just, it was there for a one and done.
Now, if you look at my physical desktop.
Oh, yeah. Same as mine. It looks like Rory vomited all over the
place. Piles of things.
Rory.
But yeah, I mean, like, just the organization is really important. And that is one thing that I carry even till physical organization as well. I'm not going to open this because I don't want anyone to see any personal information, but this may look pretty basic, but in here I have a note for every customer, every job. I have everything I need to know all written down in different colors, in different sections. I've got tabs and stickies and all sorts of wonderful things. And when somebody at my job says, hey, I'm working with this school, what can you tell me? I can just flip to that page in the book. And I've got everything right there. I don't even have to search for it on my computer.
Let's keep in mind that high school is not a trade school.
That is true. I get really annoyed when people are like, I don't know how to do a job because high school didn't teach me. That's not high school's
that's
job.
That's not the point of high school.
Well, it shouldn't be
it
the
shouldn't
point
be.
Of high school.
And
yes.
This whole thing that now I hear that, you know, now that they have over the years of budget cuts in schools, you know, that they have removed almost all of what gym used to be, and they removed almost all of what music and the rest of the arts. The next one on the list that they were attacking was history.
Yeah.
Where they're saying that, well, I don't need to know what happened in World War I because World War I isn't going to help me get a job. It's like, well, you have no idea.
Yeah.
And you can't say that. That's not fair. And that if you don't know where you've been, you don't know where you're going. History is very important.
More of that how to think.
If we
can't look back on where we've come from, how are we supposed to know how to proceed?
Exactly. High school is not about what you learn. You're learning how to learn. And you're learning how to apply learning to your daily life. Which I do every single day. Do I remember all the equations I learned in math class?
No.
Do I care? No. Because I learned, Mr. Brenner taught me how to learn math. Because when it comes to my job or to something going on, where I suddenly need an equation, I've learned how to apply a learning method and how I've learned how my personal brain works and how I learn, because how I learn is very different than everybody else.
Yes, yes, very
absolutely
different.
Learning how I learn and learning the notes I need to take in a notebook so that I can study from it later, and learning how to stay awake in class and pay attention, and you know, how to do problems and solve a thing, is something that I use every single day. That was very important. The individual equations, maybe secondary in importance.
It's the foundation, but everything else is built upon that.
I remember one day in calculus. This is my proudest day in high school.
Actually, I wouldn't say that's the foundation. I'd say if we're looking at a house, it's the foundation is the problem solving, and then the decorative pieces are the formulas.
I remember one day going through a class in calculus and just being completely fooled. I just had no idea what was going on in class. And then suddenly I had a click that we were talking about sines, cosines, and tangents. And we were talking about how, you know, the angle theta changes as it goes around the circle and how that changes the relationship between the three sides of a triangle made by that point as it traces around the circle. And I just ran to the computer lab, got onto a computer, and wrote down a couple lines of code, and then hit the activate button, and I made a dot on the screen draw a perfect circle. And then I went, wait, hold on, I think I understand something. And then I typed a couple more lines of code, and I was able to make that dot on the screen spiral out and then spiral in. Now, I'm not a coder. I don't code every day. Did that make anything? Did that affect anything in my life professionally or personally? No. But I was able to take two completely different disciplines and smoosh them together into one. And I was able to take what I learned in math and apply it to my computers and apply the code of my computers to my math class. And I was able to make something really, really cool.
Yeah.
And that was super fun for me. That was my best day in high school.
Now, I didn't do this in high school. I did this after. But I think that when I really understood pi was when I made a circle skirt. And that is one of my favorite ways to teach pi.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do it with anything. You can do it with clothing. You can do it with food. Mm-hmm. You can do it with whatever. But
how much material do I need to make a hem on this skirt if the skirt is this big?
Well, how much material do I need if I'm making a circle skirt? Because it is a circle.
Yeah.
So I'm using my waist and pi to determine the amount of material. That was the coolest thing
ever.
That
is math, baby.
And I think that, you know, practical math like that is so much fun. So there is something that I learned. When I was in school, high school, we actually had the ability to take concentrations in areas of study, like you would in university. And so for me, my concentration was in art, and it really drove me crazy that I couldn't get into the prerequisite course in ninth grade, because that was the course everybody had to take in order to graduate, and you couldn't take any of the other art courses till you had taken this course. And they were like, yeah, we don't put freshmen in that because all the seniors need it. And it really made me angry because I could have had an extra year of learning. But I'm not bitter, I'm just not over it. One of the first things that we learned in what they called studio art is the color wheel. And I thought, I know my colors. I understand how things work. I can mix colors. Why do I need to spend a month learning the color wheel?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I need to learn this thing called color theory? That's ridiculous.
I still think that your superhero alter ego is you are the human color wheel.
I am the human color wheel.
Yes. And you can find like matching and opposing colors to everything as a superpower.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love having a human color wheel.
It's not a superpower, but okay.
It is.
It's just a power.
No, because it's fun.
It's just knowledge.
Because it's great. Because it's like, Nutty, I'm building a giant stompy robot in this video game, and I need a color scheme. And what goes with these two weird colors? You're like, brown. Or whatever the third color you pick is. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I pick it, and my color scheme looks awesome every time.
There you go. Practical use.
Every time. Human color wheel.
I use color theory all the time. And not just in art. I mean, I use it in art all the time, and it makes it perfectly simple. One of the things that drives me nuts, you see this all the time. You see it in like YouTube videos. or whatever. And it's like, I'm going to mix all of my whatever together, all my nail polishes, all of my eyeshadows, all of my candles, all of my Gatorade flavors.
Why did it turn out brown?
Why is it brown? Everybody's always confused. Oh, that's weird. It's kind of brown. It's like, did you not see the colors that you were putting in? Like, how do you not get this? And it drives me crazy. But I mean, I use colors all the time, but it's not just in art. Also in things like, I need to make a sign. It needs to be legible. Color comes into play, not just like the fonts and readability, but you need to understand color. One of the things that drives me nuts is when people choose the wrong color to print something on. Or I grabbed a template for a project I was working on.
Purple on yellow is amazing.
It is. It's very readable. But I grabbed a template to work on, just one of those free templates, and for something really fast. And we open it up and it's light blue on medium blue.
Ugh.
I was like, whose bright idea was this? I know it's like an ocean theme, but you can't read anything. Why would you use this in a PowerPoint? This is terrible. And yeah, so I mean, color theory and the color wheel comes into play all the time.
So
I see people getting into various hobbies and various things, like even like nail polish people, right? They're like, oh, I wish I could do this, but I don't have that color. It's like, you have the two colors that make that color.
So just a meta note, should we move on to life lessons that we learned, or should we move on to things you wish you learned?
Let's go to the life lessons. Go right ahead. I've kind of already talked a little bit about that with, you're going to have to work with people, but go right ahead. I like your story, so I want to hear that.
So I was a bullied kid, no big surprise, skinny, brown, growing up in the North, got beat up a lot, mouthy, so invited a lot of beatings up, but I just wasn't going to take any guff, and I got beat up for it a lot. I took a gym class because we had to take gym in high school, and I took an easier gym class, thinking that the gym portion would be easier. But gym and health were tied together. And what I didn't realize is that everybody else took the easier gym class because they were too stupid for the health portion. So what I got stuck with were like all of my bullies that were taking it because it was easier than the advanced gym class, which I should have taken.
Yeah.
But it was just months of pure hell. And then when we get to the health portion, our teacher, Mr. Hunter, thank you, Mr. Hunter, shout out to Dave Hunter, North Bay, Ontario. He gave us a speech on the first day of health class. And this is good old-fashioned sex ed, you know, how the plumbing works class. And he started off with a speech about how, because it was our gym classes in high school were segregated, male and female. And it was, there is no such thing as being more of or less of a man than anyone else. And that whether you are tall, short, skinny, fat, athletic, or not, or any combination in between of whatever race or whatever, it didn't make you any more or less of a man. If you are a man, you are a man. So you cannot let someone who's better at you than athletics or academics or whatever get down on you and say that, oh, well, you're not enough of this and you're not good at that. And you are not good enough because I'm better than you. It's like, well, yeah, it doesn't matter. We're all the same. We are all people.
Yep.
And that we should all be, you know, and we are all the same. Just some of us are going to be better at some things and some of us are going to be better at other things. And nobody else in the class listened and, you know, they still picked on me, but, and I didn't really realize it at the time, but the more I got picked on in class, the more Mr. Hunter sort of stood up for me and would like pull me aside and talk to me about afterwards, because he was a little short, stocky dude, and he got picked on too. So he was doing his thing from his side.
It isn't a universal truth, but I have found, in my experience, some of the most sympathetic teachers were gym teachers. Not always. There was always the one that, like, they coached the star team and they were always a star.
He was also my history teacher, by the way.
Oh, well, that's even better. That's the other thing. Where I went to school, your gym teachers were gym teachers and that's it. And they also did not teach the health portion. They would cover things like checking for lumps and things like that and simple hygiene, but like how the plumbing works and how, you know, babies are born and all that other stuff. That was a whole course.
See, I always thought that my school was just cheap as hell, but I found out that one of our advanced math teachers was also the vocal music teacher. And I thought that that was just really, really dumb. And like, how cheap is our school that they have a math teacher teaching vocal music? Until I found out that he was the head of the town barbershop quartet for like 40 years. And that this is what he does, is that he sings choral music every day on top of being a high school English teacher or a math teacher.
Yeah. No, we didn't really have too many double duties. But I think that's a universal lesson that needs to be taught. There is nothing that makes you whatever, you know, man, woman, agender, non-binary, whatever gender you assign yourself with or you identify with, other than being that, you know, just like we've discussed this in the past, the only thing that makes you gay is being gay, you know, and like that's the thing that we would have hurled at us as insults. Apparently, that's supposed to be an insult when you're a teenager.
We are all people, and nothing makes you more or less of a people. You are people, and it doesn't matter what you are or what you identify as. It's just you are what you are, and other people are going to try to bring you down because you don't fit into their molds. And honestly, to heck with them.
It's just gatekeeping.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, we have a word for it now. There's a big thing going around lately where the younger generation are like, ugh, we don't use emojis anymore. I think this one is funny, by the way. They use emoticons now. they think they're fresh
they
with
think
emoticons.
Fresh. Yeah, well,
I can't wait till they start speaking in Leet.
Let me teach
and,
you something.
And how side parts. Where is it? There we go. Side parts are apparently out and skinny jeans are out and all this other stuff, which, you know, I mean.
Wait. Are we going back to flop do's and flares?
We're going back to middle parts.
Okay.
And I don't. And
middle parts on dudes, but like the Jonathan Brandis wave?
Probably. I'm not sure what it is about, you know, whatever. But I do know that it's not going back to flares or bootlegs. It's actually up to your over your belly button acid wash style grossness.
Oh, the 80s. I thought I forgot you.
Everything comes around again. But the thing is, all it is gatekeeping. It's like, hey, this is what my parents do. I hate it. So it's not cool. And that's pretty much all of those insults that we were all had hurled at us. It was, you don't act like the rest of us, so we hate it and it's not cool. It's just gatekeeping. And we all know now to gatekeeping.
So what's your life lesson from school?
The life lesson I learned from school is that these are 12 years out of 80 to 100 years of your life. And they will end. And they are the least significant part of your life. You have your whole life to do amazing things. And you are not going to be stuck with these people for the rest of your life.
You do not want to be the person that peaks in high school.
Yeah, like imagine you went to high school, you were on the top of the world. You spend the rest of your life hanging out with the same people, doing the same thing, and not actually living. Now, there's not to say that if you live in your hometown that, you know, you've wasted your life or anything. What I'm saying is there are people that they never progress after high school. And I think the best thing that happened to me is when I left and when I started to see the world and I started to find people that were interested in the things that I was interested in. But that, I think that was the thing that saved me. I was in a very dark place when I was in school. And the thing that saved me was meeting some really cool teachers that basically showed me that this is going to end and this is the least significant part of your life. And honestly, it was exactly the opposite of what you had, where I always thought when I was younger, I can't, you know, I'm not smart enough to do this or anything like that. And it was just, no. I am, because I'm going to go off and have adventure.
Right.
And TV is wrong, but look at all of these cool teachers that have amazing lives and have amazing adventures. And, you know, when they tell the stories and everything, because that's the thing. We had teachers that would tell us stories about art shows and working in the commercial field and all of these other things. And it kind of changed my life to make me realize I'm going to be old longer than I'm young. Mm-hmm. So I might as well make sure that whatever I'm doing, I'm going to enjoy that part of my life. And it sounds weird, but it was definitely my mindset.
I'm glad. I'm very happy for all of my teachers that taught me, you know, internet communication at the foundation of the internet in the middle 90s, where you know, learning to communicate with people digitally and learning how to navigate the web, because it led me to groups of writers and like-minded people that I've stayed
role players and geeks
that I have stayed connected to for the remainder of my life. I mean, that's how I met Nutty, and Nutty met a guy named Sonorous Vox. Sonorous Vox and I went to the same elementary school. We grew up one street apart from each other. We were friends and have been lifelong friends for a long, long time. We drifted apart when his family moved away, but he reconnected. He connected with Nutty through this writing collective, and I reconnected to him through Nutty.
Star Trek chat room. You don't have to make it sound fancier than
high nerd stuff right here, yeah. My friends.
Yeah. I will never be ashamed of meeting you in a Star Trek chat room.
Nope. And, you know, it's how we met. It's how we've stayed connected. And it's helped out our relationship. And I can all trace it back to Mr. Gervais and Mr. Paquette in high school teaching us how to use these things, how to draft emails, how to communicate, how to make yourself understood. And how from high school, you know, from the 90s, I have always said that we, and my teacher said it first, that what the internet really needs is a sarcasm font.
Yeah.
And we all need to collectively decide
on the sarcasm font.
On the sarcasm font, so people can know when you're being sarcastic.
JK.
So I vote, because we should never take this font seriously anyways, that it should be Comic Sans. That Comic Sans should be the sarcasm font. And that if it's in Comic Sans, then everybody knows you're being stupid.
Nope.
You just don't want Comic Sans in anything.
I hate Comic Sans. It is one of the most illegible fonts ever.
I know.
And it is hell for anybody with dyslexia or other processing.
Well, that's why
disorders.
We have Open Dyslexia.
Yes, Open Dyslexic is the best font in the world.
Everyone, find Open Dyslexic and use it for everything. It's great, and you'll help somebody
out. And then look around at how many podcasts have Open Dyslexic as their font, and then go, hey, did Nutty design this one?
Wait, are there dyslexics everywhere?
Yes.
As a disclaimer, you didn't invent Open Dyslexic.
I did not invent Open Dyslexic.
Just
no,
in case there was any ambiguity there.
I just use it for everything because it is so legible. It is great for people who are dyslexic.
Wait, is that what you're using around your little Twitch screen right now?
Yes, that is exactly the font that I'm using around my Twitch screen.
To anybody
right
who's
now.
Going, what the heck are you talking about? Notice that all of the letters are a little heavier on the bottom than they are on the top. That prevents someone with dyslexia from jumbling those letters.
And it works for people who don't have dyslexia. So
yeah, it's just easier
perfect.
To read.
So even with that small text that is scrolling, you can read it very clearly. I mean, I have visual problems and I can read that very clearly.
I don't have visual problems and I can read it very clearly.
Okay, but you can also read like the text over here really clearly.
I can.
Yeah, I cannot.
No.
So what do you wish that you learned in school?
Something that I, more mental health.
Yes.
Mental health awareness was something, and I think it's just a sign of the times, because in the 2000s, in a professional environment, was when mental health awareness started really coming out, and we really started a lot into the suicide intervention training and mental health awareness training, and really sort of started looking out for each other, not needing to be a professional or a social worker or a mental health worker to be able to identify the warning signs that somebody's behavior is being a little weird. Maybe we should ask them some questions, and learning things like active listening and, you know, being there for somebody and just asking a couple questions and then doing what we can do to help make them safe. When we're not talking about, I'm not talking about physical intervention. I'm not talking about pulling somebody off a ledge.
Just like noticing a warning sign.
Noticing a warning sign and talking to someone.
You know, like, hey, this person I know in class is acting differently And I'm worried.
Yeah, maybe I should ask your teacher, hey, have they noticed that Johnny's acting weird? Or maybe I can go to Johnny and say, hey, Johnny, I know we don't hang out, but I'm really worried about you because you're acting a little weird today. Is there anything I can do? And they'll probably tell you no, but you never know. Maybe he's like,
but there's this case I'm thinking of where that very seriously stops somebody from doing something dangerous to themselves.
Censorship is good.
I will sum up the story if it's okay. Mm-hmm. Very easily, the right thing can really save a person, and the wrong thing could push a person over the edge. So sometimes we have to be careful about what we say.
Right.
Yeah.
But we have to be careful about what we say and what we do, but we also have to look out for one another.
Yeah.
And I think that had we been a little more careful with each other and had we been a little bit more caring with each other a few years before we all started openly giving a crap, and that, you know, weird and horrible, shocking things in the 80s and 90s, like that guys are allowed to cry, or that guys are allowed to have feelings, or that guys are allowed to be fictionally, physically affectionate with each other.
Yeah.
Without needing to be beaten up because somehow being gay is
like the worst thing in the world
is
in the
bad
80s.
And being weak in the 80s. It always boggled my mind.
Yeah.
I just wish this was something that we were closer with each other, because one, it would have probably saved me a lot of pain and heartache in school.
Yep.
Probably saved a lot of other people with some pain and heartache in school.
Yep.
And I'm glad that I got the education that I did, and I'm glad that I'm able to do the work that I do now, especially, you know, the mental health work that I've been able to do, because I'll be blunt, I've saved lives, and it feels really good. And I like that I was able to be there for people. I just wish I could have done it sooner.
Yeah. Yeah. And
how about you?
So for me, because you brought up this very serious topic, and I'm going to agree with you completely on that, to the point that, like, I had to lie about my therapy sessions when I was in school, you know? I mean, and I'm not a person that really feels shame about things like that, but it was the time, you know, and that's wrong. I also think that I wish we learned about consent when I was younger, because I think there's a lot of things that I didn't understand, and it's taken me too long to understand. And I think I'm pretty good about it, at least at this point. But I think that there's a lot that I might not have understood. And I think that there's a lot of things that go along with that. That has nothing to do, when people hear consent, they think of people being inappropriate sexually or things like that. I'm trying to word it delicately. But it has everything to do with so much more. It doesn't have to be sexual. It doesn't have to be relationship. It could be between friends, or it could be between people that barely know each other. That consent is so important about everything. There are people that we know, you know, we are in a community of huggers, of people that are very affectionate with each other, because we're okay with that, depending on, you know, does not matter your gender, we can be affectionate. Not everybody appreciates that.
And then in the martial arts, we are also a community of huggers, because we're grapplers.
Yeah, we're grapplers.
Our hugs are kinetic, and we will throw you to the ground and then find it funny and then ask you to do it to us because it's really funny. But it's a different type. It's just a high-speed hug.
Yeah, but again, everything is, even in there where we're learning to fight, everything has to be focused around consent. I think that, you know, with consent, there's so much more having to do with that. And if just learning about that, I think, could make such a difference. And one of the things is that too often people go with the crowd, and it's not about what they want. It's about what is expected. You know, what is the standard? So when you hear, oh, look at that person, they're wearing that, how funny is that? Or mocking people like that, and you kind of laugh because everybody else is laughing. I think consent goes into that, because it's like, well, I don't actually want to do that. And what if I, you know, you think more about other people's feelings. And I just know for myself, when I started being more empathetic, I guess, I just always, it's like, I get you're trying to be funny, but that's not funny, because that person did not agree to you making fun of them. You know, it's like people taking pictures of somebody in the real world and then making fun of them online. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the memes. A lot of times when I see a meme, I'm like, I don't know if the person in the meme is consenting to this. Mm. And so I think that it just connects to a lot of things. And I know that's a really roundabout thing, but I'm saying that I wish I learned it only because I know that they're teaching that now.
Right.
And they're teaching at a young age.
I wish I'd learned to drive in high school. I wish driver's ed was still a part of my school, but they cut it when I got there.
There's a lot of little things, adulting tasks. Mm-hmm. I wish there were certain adulting tasks that I learned. And I think that
I wish
they're doing better about it now.
I wish that there had been a some type of, I'm going to use the term etiquette, and maybe that's not correct. I'm not talking about like an Emily Post up drinking tea sort of a thing, but like a more of a social etiquette. Like, this is the type of joke you can tell around your boss. This is the type of thing you can talk to your coworkers. That's fair.
You have that in French.
Because we have different grammar, but
you have different grammar based on your situation, but we don't have that in English. No. It's much more subtle.
Right. Another thing is, because it's something that's been so prevalent in my adult life and we just don't talk about anywhere in school, is, while we're talking about etiquette, is I really wish I'd learned anything about drinking etiquette.
Yeah.
Because that's something you learned the dumb way. Because you're going to get drunk at the house party of your boss and you're going to say something stupid to his wife and then you're going to regret it the next day. And, or you're going to puke in somebody's potted plant or, you know, something. And no one ever talks about that junk. And that maybe this needs to be one of those like elective credits in high school. You know, all right, everybody, here's a bottle of tequila. We're going to pass this around and then we're going to play cards.
Yeah, just imagine how that one goes.
And the first guy who says something dumb fails. You know, it doesn't work, obviously.
I wish there was something there because there's a lot of people that I've worked with that did not learn that and ruined their careers that way.
Oh, yeah.
There is an etiquette for sure. And I think etiquette is the right word. I wish that I learned a lot of history, but I did not learn enough of the right history. Mm-hmm. It was very limited and, cleaned up, if you will. And just to give a slight thing, we all learned that the explorers discovered, I'm doing the bunny quotes, the New World because they wanted to open a trade route for spices.
Yeah.
All of that is lies.
All of it. I really wish that we had had a class on, and we did have a class on the legal system, but I wish it was more about interactions that we would have with the legal system, like what to say to a police officer when they stop you.
Oh, you know what?
How to talk to a judge when you're hauled up in front of the pulpit. These are your rights when you're discussing things with an attorney. These are attorney-client privileges. These are spousal privileges. These are, you know.
Yeah. And I don't even think that they do that very well right now because, like, a lot of schools, especially high schools or middle schools, will have cops in the school. Mm-hmm. And one of the things is that they tell kids that these cops are there to protect them, and they're not.
Let's not surmise.
What I'm saying is most kids don't even know their rights. They're told you don't have rights. And they're told if we ask you a question, you have to answer it. And that's not true. And that goes for teachers as well.
Let's not surmise. We can't speak for everyone in every jurisdiction precinct.
Yes, I know. I'm just saying, like, how many times did you have somebody tell you something? And I didn't have it exactly worded this way, but everybody gets the feeling this is going to go on your permanent record.
I got in trouble.
You're going to get in more trouble for not talking than for talking.
I got in trouble in third grade for doodling a race car at the bottom of a grammar test because the answer, the question, it was all done on a tape recorder where the word would be spoken and then you would have to write it out. Mm-hmm. And it was going too slow for me. So I was doodling a race car at the bottom of my sheet of foolscap. And the teacher got mad at me. She's like, you can't draw on this test. Did I answer all the questions correct? Well, yeah, but this is going on your permanent record and now there's a drawing on it. So it was a NASCAR race car that had the word spelling machine as the big sponsor.
I mean, it's perfect.
Nimlas forever.
and kids are often lied to, and then we wonder why they don't trust us. And they have problems with
never authority. Trust anyone over 40.
It's true. Never trust
anyone under 40 is what I'm telling myself now. No, I'm kidding.
That's also true. Don't trust anyone over 40 and don't trust anyone under 40.
Don't trust people.
Yeah. I will say there's the teachers that I thought were the worst. Not all of them, but like the teachers that were super strict and seemed humorless and just seemed like a little cold. Looking back, those are my favorite teachers because those were the teachers that treated me like a person and had the same expectations for me as they did for everybody else. And the teachers that were warm buddy-buddy with some students and not with others were disgusting, in my opinion. I don't like that.
I got to give a big shout out to Mr. and Mrs. Payne that worked in my school. To the Paynes. Mr. Payne was a guidance, one of our guidance teachers, and Mrs. Linda Payne was my English teacher. Mr. Payne passed away quite a few years ago, almost immediately after he retired. He died on the ice at a hockey game of a heart attack, and Mrs. Payne died a few years later of a broken heart.
Yeah.
But both of them were very influential because in Little Techie, being who is who he is today, because Mrs. Payne actually wrote one of the recommendation letters that I needed to get the job that I have today, that nice. I still have 20 something odd years later. And Mr. Payne was one of the influential people who got me away from the bullies that were ruining my life.
Nice.
So without the two of them, I wouldn't be here today.
Is Mr. Payne the one that delivered your diploma?
No. That was my co-op teacher.
Oh, okay.
Who actually came to my place of work to deliver my diploma through the window of his car because that was my graduation in a parking lot.
So Miss Melissa says, I was very fortunate that most of my school experiences were positive. I'm even Facebook friends with my AP bio teacher and my freshman year dance teacher from high school. I was actually trying to track down my sixth grade teacher because he was very influential and changed things for me drastically. And then my search ran cold when I tried calling the school district and they were like, I don't know what you expect from us. We can't help you. And then I found out about a year later that he had passed. And I felt really bad that I couldn't reconnect and tell him what he did meant to me.
Yeah. I get the same thing here, Miss Melissa. You know, I was in a couple gifted classes as well. And you get... I always had huge amounts of imposter syndrome in gifted classes where I really didn't feel like I belonged and that I wasn't smart enough. And that it was very, very good teachers. Mr. Brenner, my math teacher, comes to mind, that could make learning fun even when it's really hard and really complicated. You know, by teaching you the quadratic equation in Gregorian chant. And Mr. Furtney, my music and history teacher in middle school, who would just, you know, drop the occasional cuss word in class just to make sure you were still paying attention. It's like, you know, talking about soddies and dung houses and how people, you know, prairie settlers in the 1800s would make houses out of dried dung. Then you'd look around the room and he goes, who doesn't know what dung is? And people would put up their hands. He goes, you know what?
Taco.
Me. Beep. Taco. And then... okay, but there's an important part to that story in that one of the girls in my class actually put forward a formal complaint that the teacher swore.
Oh, boy. But I had some pretty great teachers and I had some pretty garbage teachers. And I did not have the you're in a gifted program because I was never put in a gifted program. I didn't really excel until I got to college. I mean, I did all right. But my biggest problem in school was I got bored. So what did they do? They put me in easier classes. And this was the big thing that would happen, is I would be moved from the intermediate classes to the easier classes because my bullies were in the intermediate classes.
Yeah, it's the same problem I had.
Yeah, and it was just like, I was the kid that was in the easier math class, and then I would spend my days off going into the city and going to math class with another school.
My last academic semester, I was actually homeschooled.
Yeah,
because it just got so severe that I was given my bully's bus schedule,
so you could avoid it, which is ridiculous.
I knew when they left the school, which was, at about 4 PM. And then I would do all of my assignments and my homework at home. And then I only had a couple of classes in this like last semester of school, but then I would go in once they left and I would talk to my teacher. We would go over any questions that I had and I would write all of my tests in the evening.
Yeah. And this is your school, by the way, failing you. Like, we know this. We all understand.
Right.
They did not handle bullies well back then.
They didn't, but they got me through it. They accommodated to my learning.
Yep.
They accommodated to my needs.
Yeah.
And they made sure I got through it. So,
and you got a real diploma instead of getting like a GED or something.
Right. And but to be honest, I don't think they failed. I think maybe they could have handled it better. But at the end of the day, I still graduated high school and I'm still a full and complete and wholesome person with a full life and actual friends and real car keys and everything. And so's everybody else. I mean, we all made it through it.
Faye says his big regret in secondary school was taking commerce instead of home ec. I think there's a lot of people, what do they call it? My nephew's in what he's told is, what is it, family and career skills.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically like what we would have called home ec and technology merged.
Right.
With actual, like, I think it would be better if you just called it an adulting course.
So we had home ec, which was like cooking, but... Yeah. In middle school, but in high school, it was called Intro to Business. Mm. And that's where you learned things like, here's an old school thing that doesn't exist anymore. Things like balancing a checkbook.
Yeah.
And they would give you ins and outs. And then you'd have to like write out like a checkbook and keep everything in track and, how to make a budget.
I think in this course that he's in, there's budgeting, how to do a shopping trip and things like that. But it's also, how do you make dinner?
Yeah.
How do you prepare lunches? He had a cake to make for one of his projects. Now his mother happens to be a professional baker. And so she made sure to videotape him doing everything so that he couldn't be accused that your mom just did this for you.
Here's something that I wish was mandatory in all schools. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it is, but it absolutely should be if it isn't. Is basic first aid and CPR.
Yes, I agree. I did not learn that in school.
No, and I did because it was an elective in middle school as part of a Red Cross.
You had a lot of opportunities.
It was a Red Cross certified babysitting course that I took when I was 13, which my parents wouldn't let me stay at home alone with my little sister until I took my babysitting course. But it included basic first aid and CPR, but things like how to splint a limb, how to do a slip.
Yeah.
How to stop bleeding, how to identify a pulse, how to do CPR, how to call poison control, what 911, what's the number for 911,
09935 4.
Yeah, exactly.
6, 7, 1. 2, 1.
Exactly, that old joke. That old nut, chestnut. But that's...
Three people got that joke.
Right. But I love that I love that course and it was very important. And I think
everyone should know it. I think it is true that everybody should know like how to perform the Heimlich, how to take a pulse,
Heimlich maneuver, 1,000%. Everyone needs to know.
But to know the dangers of it as well. Because a lot of times people think I could just do this. And they've seen things on TV and then they do more harm than good.
Well, the Heimlich is pretty safe, but CPR is the one. And that's the thing. It's like, understand that if you do CPR correctly, you are shattering a rib cage.
Yep. Yep.
But I would very much rather that you suffer 6 broken ribs than me attend your funeral.
Yeah. So,
guess what? I'm shattering ribs.
Miss Melissa says junior year of high school, physics, trig, calculus, a semester of each. And advanced music theory at the same time. It was so intense until I realized it was all the same stuff from different angles.
Yes.
And then Faye said, well, trig is all about the angles.
You know, Melissa, and this is something that I've noticed the more music I listen to, music is just math. And I love it. And it's so beautiful that I can listen to a piece of music and predict what's coming up. Yeah. Because it's all math.
Yeah.
And one thing that I have really fallen in love with over the last few years is harmonies. And I love barbershop. And we found a couple barbershop groups that, well, Nutty doesn't like, but I really love.
I don't dislike them.
No. So shout out to Main Street and the Barberettes.
Oh, I like the Barber ads.
Yeah, they're really good. But
go ahead.
Harmony is just math.
It's just math.
1, 3, 5.
And I don't get it. So Miss Melis says, y'all were talking about work-life etiquette earlier. Senior year civics teacher. Managed to divide all the liberal kids into one class and conservative kids into the other so he could take the opposite position.
Oh, that's a cool teacher.
That is kind of cool. And then 2, he gave us a list of books that every well-rounded person should be familiar with. All right. That's cool. Faye says secondary school runs 6 years in Ireland. First 3 is like commerce, science, etc. And then transition year, which many schools skipped when I was growing up. The senior year cycle, the final 2 years splits into economics and accounting and the 3 sciences. Oh, okay. So it's like
middle school, high school combined.
Yeah. So for us, secondary is what they used to call junior high and high school, which they now call middle or intermediate school and high school. And it just basically means, you know, 6th or 7th and up is secondary. Some schools, it'll all be one school, and some schools it'll be broken up. I remember those ads, Miss Melis, about if you teach a child music. Yes. And the new math by Tom
Lehrer,
which we're all dealing with again with the Common Core.
Common
math,
Core. Your number is, number lines.
Well, no. Number lines is the new math. Common Core is the boxes.
The boxes. When my niece taught me how to do multiplication through boxes, I looked at it and it's like, this makes so much sense. This is so much fun. It's really cool and it works. Is it wrong? No. Is it different? Yes.
Yeah.
Is it impossible for you to do your child's homework? Absolutely. But it's just a different way to learn the same skill that we did. My parents, my dad learned long division upside down.
Yeah.
And I have had him show me how he does long division.
It's long division in French.
It's long division. No, well, it's not even that. It's just a different way of learning because we learned new math. He didn't because my dad was
born. But my mom doesn't do long division upside down.
So I have really tried to understand how my dad does long division upside down, and I just don't get it.
But
my dad can divide as easily. My dad's an engineer. My dad's an electrician by trade. He did 40 years as a professional electrician. And the math that he does to do all of his calculations is just as valid as mine. We just have a different way of scribbling it on paper. When my nieces and nephews do math, they're going to scribble it on paper different than me. But at the end, as long as the number's the same, it doesn't matter what method they use to get there.
Now, and my only problem is this idea that there's one great way to teach everybody. And I think that there are different ways. There's one great way to teach each individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that for some people, the boxes will work. For some other people, the number line will work. For other people, upside down math works. And a lot of times it's just what we were taught. But I think if we're given different options, finding the one that works best for us is going to work. Because a lot of what they're teaching is how I always do math in my head anyway. So it's some people will get there on their own. But if we just expose everyone to the different types of learning, we'll be better. We'll be better off. So that's what we thought was really good that we learned. We didn't think we'd ever use it, and we use it all the time. What did you learn in school that you thought, I'm never going to need this, and you use it all the time? You can tell us by just listening to any of the socials at the end of this episode, or if you go to our Discord, you can pop it in the Discord and just let us know, what do you value that you learned in school? Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-NUTTY42.
Hi. I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel.